Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
So tomorrow the kids are off school, and I always had off school for Columbus Day. And I remember, as I'm sure most of us do, learning that rhyme about 1492. Does everybody know this one, in 1492? And I remember, as I'm sure most of us do, learning about Christopher Columbus and his three boats, right? Always with the three boats. His determination to prove that the world was round. What I don't actually remember is when I learned about the horrors that he visited on the peoples of these lands. I learned about it, about enslaved native peoples and hands being chopped off and the longer history that followed of genocide and death marches and oppression and children stolen and deprived of their heritage. I don't remember when, but I definitely learned about the hubris required to arrive in a land and declare that one had discovered it and it was now theirs. I don't remember when, but I learned about the ways that the brave settlers who came seeking religious freedom and a new life stole the lives of others, displaced them, tricked them, killed them. My oldest child came home this week with just a little bit about Columbus Day from Spanish class, actually. He came home with the names of the boats and something about the Spanish queen and jewels that I don't remember learning as a kid, and that the Spanish king called Columbus crazy. So we had a talk, my son and I. We talked about how you cannot discover a land where people already live. We talked about how Columbus and those who sailed with him treated the indigenous people of these lands badly. We talked about Indigenous Peoples Day, which is this replacement for Columbus Day, in a few dozen cities and towns around the United States, and actually in four whole states, Columbus Day has been replaced by Indigenous Peoples Day, a day that celebrates not the beginning of an invasion, but celebrates the people who had lived and thrived here, who have for centuries determinedly resisted extinction at the hands of those invaders. As the description of the day on the Unitarian Universalist Association website says, it reimagines Columbus Day and changes a celebration of colonialism into an opportunity to reveal historical truths about the genocide and oppression of indigenous peoples in the Americas, to organize against current injustices, and to celebrate indigenous resistance. So often we create narratives. Winners tell the story and they tell it to make themselves look good. And that simple narrative of the Americas is that courageous settlers forged a new path, made a new world, discovered and built here, searching for opportunity, fleeing persecution. But the real truth, the historical truth, is one of colonization and death. And it's hard to face that truth. The truth that many of our own ancestors took part in a self-serving land grab based on the belief that the people from whom they took this land were less than people. It isn't always easy to talk about that, but that's the truth. The Unitarian Universalist Association at its 2012 General Assembly repudiated what is called the Doctrine of Discovery. It's actually from a papal bull in 1493, that basically declared that any land that wasn't inhabited by Christians was available for discovery and for taking, discounting the humanity and the rights of non-Christians. This view continued, and centuries later, in the 19th century, you kind of find this weird version of it, this concept of manifest destiny. Does anyone remember that from high school history class? The notion that it was not only the right, but the call of Americans to move west and civilize the wild country, once again discounting the people that lived there. Both these ideas carry with them a deep sense of the supremacy of European Christianity. Both these ideas carried with them a denigration of people who don't fit that category. Like all ideas, they were not universally accepted, but they were strong and they are the narrative that we often still tell. The discovery of the Americas, the expansion of European control, they are still to this day told with spin. Just last week, a Canadian children's workbook was pulled off the shelves because it read, "When the European settlers arrived, they needed land to live on. The First Nations peoples agreed to move to different areas to make room for the new settlements." This is just last week, right, that this was pulled off the shelves, and it was a new book. It's not like it was a book from 50 years ago. As individuals, it can be very hard to tell the truth about our own personal shame and guilt, and it can be just as hard to tell the truth about our national shames and guilts. I also realize it can seem very hard to tell that truth to children, to reframe this holiday, to tell a different rhyme. But it is actually an act of privilege when we can avoid retelling it. Indigenous children, still suffering the effects of colonialism, don't have the choice to simply not learn about what really happened. They live it every day. Telling the truth isn't easy, but it must be done. For the last couple of weeks, there's been a controversy I'm sure most of you have seen, oddly fueled most lately by the president, around the national anthem before football games. I'm sure you have noticed this. Over a year ago, actually, a player named Colin Kaepernick started to kneel during the national anthem to highlight police brutality against black people and the ways that our country isn't living up to the promise inherent in the national anthem, that we're the land of the free and the home of the brave. There was a bit of backlash, and in fact, Kaepernick, I think, still hasn't been picked up. I could be wrong about that, but I think he still hasn't been picked up once he got out of contract. It was dying down, but then the president, a couple of weeks ago, for some reason, decided to bring it back into the center, saying and then tweeting that any player that kneeled should be fired for disrespecting the flag. The result was that more and more players took a knee, and in fact, then coaches and owners and other players who hadn't been taking a knee all locked arms. And the past couple of Sundays, football's been a fascinating thing to watch for someone like me who never watches football. It's been a show of solidarity, their belief that it's a player's right to protest peacefully. But the vitriol that came out in reaction after the president brought it back to the center has been so very deeply racist. These players, black football players, this is what people have been saying, should be grateful that they're allowed to make so much money. They should be grateful they live somewhere where they can play a game for a living. They should be quiet, entertain us the way they're supposed to, not get greedy, and God forbid they use their fame to highlight issues of racism. They should not disrespect the flag of this country that has given them so much. These are the criticisms that have been lobbed at players who have dared to protest so peacefully the murder of black men. This is what is coming at people who have knelt during the national anthem. Many across this country see them as anti-military or anti-patriotic, as if kneeling were inherently disrespectful, as if America was defined by its military, or as if the flag deserved blind allegiance. In fact, Eric Reed, a player who first joined Kaepernick in the kneeling, wrote this in the New York Times. "After hours of careful consideration, and even a visit from Nate Boyer, a retired Green Beret and former NFL player, we came to the conclusion that we should kneel rather than sit the next day during the anthem as a peaceful protest. We chose to kneel because it's a respectful gesture. I remember thinking our posture was like a flag flown at half-mast to mark a tragedy." Like a flag at half-mast, or, and I'm not the first to say this, like a body in prayer. That's a traditional prayer position. Praying, hoping that the flag might come to truly embody all the best of our American idealism. There are many people out there defending the right of free speech and protest, arguing that those moments before a football game, as the anthem plays and those enormous flags are held out over the field, are just as good a moment as any to peacefully lift up the ways in which we fail to tell the truth about who we are and what we're doing. Because the truth is that this country is deeply racist. Trevor Noah, the host of The Daily Show, said this: "This idea that black people should be grateful is some sneaky-ass racism. Because when a white billionaire spends a year screaming that America is a disaster, he's in touch with the country. But when a black man kneels quietly, he should be grateful for the successes America has allowed him to have." That notion of gratitude is a racist trope that suggests black people ought to just accept what they're given because they clearly didn't do anything to earn it, because how could they have? The response to this simple and powerful and peaceful protest is founded in an insidious prejudice that declares yet again that Christian whites of European descent are better, should get to dictate to others how to live, how to behave. The truth of American racism is a truth we've been working harder to tell ourselves. It's a painful truth, centuries of oppression, of slavery and death and imprisonment, of denigration. And our friends of color know this truth deeply because they can't avoid it. They know every day the truth of racism in this country. And those of us who don't are living with privilege. Telling the truth isn't easy, but it must be done. Last Monday, we woke to news of yet another mass shooting, seemingly one of the first we've seen in a while, and yet it's one among many. If you define mass shooting as four or more people shot in one incident, not counting the shooter, there have been 1,516 mass shootings in the last 1,735 days, according to Britain's The Guardian. That's an average of a mass shooting every 9 out of 10 days in this country for the last 4-plus years. That's an absurdity, and it's heartbreaking. And we don't say it enough, meaning with each mass shooting, we act like it's the first in a while. And in fact, it's just daily living in this country. Last Monday, we cried and we lit candles and we posted and reposted on social media all sorts of articles and statistics and theories about why there continue to be these eruptions of horrible violence, particularly among white men, because that is who's largely committing these crimes. They're almost all men, many white. And mostly we refuse to refer to them as terrorists, and we try to psychologize and sympathize. In the wake of the tragedy on Monday, there were already those saying that this is not the time to talk about gun control. This is the time for thoughts and prayers, and political debates about guns can come later. But here's the thing, and I wasn't here last year during the election, but I said this over and over all throughout that year. This is not political. This isn't partisan, and this isn't theoretical. There aren't two sides to this. If the sides are easy access to guns that brings death upon death upon death and gun control, there are not two sides. I just don't think there are. When we prioritize our own rights over another human being's life, something is wrong. When we defend with every single breath a line in a document over 2 centuries old and then stare on with a shrug as if there's nothing we can do as our fellow humans die, something is wrong. There are so many lies wrapped up in this particular issue, so many ways in which we tell ourselves stories rather than tell the truth. This is what the Second Amendment guarantees, some claims. This is about individual rights, some claim. This is about freedom, some claim. We need to defend ourselves, some claim. There aren't so many, some claim. Or they aren't so often, some claim. But the truth is very different. The truth is mass shootings occur daily. The truth is the Second Amendment was never intended to guarantee this. The truth is individual rights don't trump a right to live. The truth is guns are hardly a defense. The truth is, we are a nation that prioritizes gun ownership over human lives. The truth is that any family that has lost someone to gun violence knows that guns are not an answer. Telling the truth isn't easy, and it must be done. The truth is, this nation was born in violence, built on oppression, stolen from the start. The truth is that racism is woven into the fabric of this nation. The truth is, prejudice against non-white, non-Christians is alive and well in the 21st century. The truth is, the violence and fear that feed racism and prejudice and have fed the development of this country from the start also feed a gun-loving narrative of the need for protection. The truth is, the violence and the anger and the fear and the prejudice and the oppression are all part of a larger story of idealizing individualism, condemning vulnerability, valorizing being right over being just, and refusing to acknowledge our shared humanity. The truth is heartbreaking, and it is hard to speak, and it is hard to hear. Because this truth will continue to bring more sadness and more anger and more death if it continues. There needs to be another way. And we believe that there can be another way. And it starts with being able to say and to hear the hard truths without turning a blind eye, without closing our ears, without shutting down. It starts with being able to say the hard truths to our family and to our friends, to our children, to ourselves. It starts with remaining open, non-judgmental, non-defensive, and saying what we know to be true about this country. It's only when we speak the truth that we will be able to change anything. And we are called to be a voice of truth. As Unitarian Universalists, we are called to rise above our own personal commitments and feelings of inadequacy and needs for security. We are called to take risks as we speak the truth about this world we live in. We are called to follow the lead of Indigenous peoples, of Black people, of marginalized and oppressed groups throughout this nation who have been resisting for hundreds of years. We are called to follow their lead in speaking truths that are hard to hear, especially in our communities of privilege that still want to avoid hearing them. But when we speak them and hear them with open eyes and open hands and open minds and open hearts, when we can encourage others in our communities of privilege to do the same, then we can begin to change the world together. So may it be.